Okay, so you want to start, Millie?
My name's Millie, and I was born in Leith, and when they cleared the slums, I moved over to the Portobello area where I still stay.
My name's John, and I was born on a street called Arthur Street in the St Leonard district of Edinburgh. I now live near Toll Cross in Edinburgh.
My name's Jimmy. I was born in Loanheid, out in the middle of the industry outside Edinburgh, but I've been longer in Edinburgh than I've been in Loanheid, so I don't know what I am.
My name's Noel. I was also born in Leith, and in the 50s, when people were moving out, we moved out to Socton Mains, and I now live in the centre of the town.
And I'm John. Born in a grass market, that's right, in the old town. I lived here until I got married, then I moved into nicer places, right, like Toll Cross, and now Morningside. Anything more about me? I'm a storyteller, like Millie there, and that's about it.
Are you all writers as well as being storytellers and stuff as well?
No. Well, I'm writing short plays, learning with Millie, because Millie's my tutor, my mentor, yes.
So that's how you all know
winning
this, we're writing circles and stuff.
Well, I know the John and Noel from the storytelling. I've just met Uncle Jimmy the day, but I quite like him. And John here, I've known him for a few years because we started up a playwriting group and for older people cannot get their work done. And so we started up this group on our own, and that's what we do. And John had a play on last year that was in Scots, and it was an absolute tremendous success, one of the finest things that Citadel Arts Group's ever done.
Nice one, brilliant. Jen, is there any chance I could just get you to come in a tiny wee bit? It'll really save my arm. I know it's a pest, but it just makes the whole thing flow.
Me too.
If you can, John, very cosy. Now, we'll start the conversation with whatever words you thought of. Oh, I've got a great one for that. Has anybody got any suggestions to kick things off? Millie.
Well, unwell. I mean, unwell is something, I know a word really that they would have used in Admiralty Street where I came from. They'd have said they were peely wally.
Would anybody else use that word?
I would use that word, yes. I've got peely wally written down here, actually, yeah.
Well, I don't have that. I've just got sick.
That's another good one, isn't it?
Is it all dialect words you want? Because it's other expressions. It'd be under the weather. Below par, not up to the mark, not up to scratch. You know, yes. Phrases.
What do you think folk in Leith or folk in Edinburgh would generally say?
Me, I'd say no wheel. No keeping very wheel, aye.
As John said, they would just say, oh, I'm sick.
Is it kind of more common these days to say sick, and then maybe years ago, I thought might have said Pili Wally or whatever?
Oh, yeah, Pili Wally's died out a bit, I think. Yeah.
Referring more specifically to how your complexion is, other than a condition, I think.
That's interesting.
Nowadays they would say I'm out of sorts, definitely. But I was looking at it, you know, back to my granny's day, and I thought, well, she'd have said, oh, you're looking off your peely wally the day. I'm no real granny.
Well, when we said sick, that meant you was vomiting. You see, that was a difference, I think, anyway.
Yeah. Are you saying no wheel if you were
not? No wheel, are you?
I'm kind of like that. I would always say seek, I think, if I was literally being seek. If I wasn't a wheel, I would just say I wasn't a wheel. Mm. Interesting. Right, what about tired? Well, we're starting on a light note, aren't we?
Wabbit. Aye. I'd still say wabbit. Oh, God, I'm wabbit.
I don't mean the wascally wabbit either.
Well, we would have said, I'm knackered. Knackered.
I like that. Well, a bit knackered and all.
A Norwegian word has seeped into our language.
Is it now? Is knackered Norwegian?
It's other languages. It's a Norse word.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Do you care what it means in Norse?
Doesn't matter. That's what it means in Norse. But it became that, you know, that you were exhausted, really tired.
Now, a few folk I've spoken to have said that knackered has, you know, they were discouraged for using that word when they were young. Did any of you have that experience?
It's not a polite word to use. Oh, it's quite common in Loughnead. Of course, another politest there.
But again, the confusion maybe was there at the knacker's yard where the horses went, you know. I've just found what I had for tired. The other one was done in.
Washed out. And they were still washed out today. You know, most people would say, oh, I'm washed out.
Some folks said that knackered can have sexual connotations that meant they were not.
Yes, I would go along with it.
What does that mean? What kind of...
Well...
You're not to be fair to say things in front of me. You're not to be fair to either swear or say anything kind of controversial, because that's part of the riddle language comes with.
Well, I think it meant it was referred to often, even with horses or animals. Knackers, meaning the size or shape of them and so on. And that's why I think that kids wouldn't have been encouraged to use it, because going to school, you were then told just exactly how wrong you were speaking, and you weren't speaking proper English at that time. I think we all went through that experience. And that was one of the words that was taught at school.
Now, that's interesting, because I was speaking to folk yesterday in Aberdeen, who said they'd never really been discouraged for using the tongue of their generation. They're probably 70, 80-year-olds, and they had never had any problems. Were you told to talk proper at school?
Oh, yes. In fact, from the very... I think it's our first experience, really, that there was such a language as Scots, the school I went to, because you were being corrected all the time. And if you were bold enough when you went home, then you began to correct your parents, you see, if you were bold enough. And so I think that's how we all learned, anyway, to be bilingual. In other words, although I went to university, indeed, it was wise to speak a certain way at university, a formal English way, got you on a bit quicker. But when you went home to your pals or your relatives, you just lapsed into the old mother tongue and you spoke the way that you always did, just like Burns did. He was bilingual. He spoke perfect English, but also he spoke the Ayrshire dialect. And I think that that happened at school with us until gradually some of us made a better job than others. There were some kids in the classroom whose mothers and fathers obviously spoke the same way as the teacher. Or the doctor, or the insurance man, or whoever came to the door, who seemed to be quite articulate and speak differently from us. But we were always aware that when we were speaking improperly.
And do you all think yourselves as bilingual?
Definitely. I mean, it depends on who I'm talking to and how I would speak. And when I first started to write, actually, I had problems. And somebody said to me, you're not a novelist. I wasn't a novelist. I had written it in English, and it was a working class Scots novel, and you'd lost the warmth and the humour of it. And once you went back to the mother tongue, you were fine. You see, in school, the only time you were allowed to speak Scots was the week coming up to Burns's birthday. And that was the only time you were allowed Scots in this classroom, and you were corrected all the time. So what I ended up with was a good report for the social work department, but it certainly wasn't a working class novel. And I've learned from that, because you have to go back to your mother tongue and you write it and you get the warmth and you get the humour, because no matter where you go, even like Leith to Morningside, it's a different rhythm and a different song.
Tell me about the passage, the journey
from Leith to Morningside. Oh, the passage. Well, he's staying in
Morningside. It was always known that they spoke a bit different from us.
Give me a blast of Morningside, John.
A phrase? Yeah. Well, I would say, my husband, I would say to him that they are orang. Sometimes I got words wrong, you see. Or I would tell my husband that I have a sore head. Sometimes they got mixed up there. But otherwise, that's how the Morningside spoke, and they still do. Oh, yes, they flatten the vowel, you know, instead of saying to, they say T, you know, my sore T, that'd be another clanger. But in the mid-clangers, they still do some of them. But that's the way they spoke. And so, therefore, like school, you know, They wouldn't have been corrected at school, of course, because there were one or two morning siders there. It seemed to suit the teacher's accent, you know? And so it was a case of, well, Denny, and say don't, and not Winnie, but won't, you know? And that sort of thing. But that was the morning siders. And it goes on and on, of course, the expression. That was one of them. They have a lone of the vowels, the flattening of them, you know? A. Oh, yes.
No, sex was what coal came in.
That's right.
You know, things. Sex, bags, sacks. So. But I had a different experience because I wasn't particularly encouraged to speak street vernacular in a house because my mother was born in Ireland. So there was my grandmother would have wanted us to speak not in Scots, because they thought that was slang. So words like grund, grund, and that were just kind of purged from our vocabulary at home. So that we had the school language, what you were talking in the street, and probably something in the middle in the house. But there was a kind of an awareness that you try to avoid obvious Scottishisms.
As far as the written Scots is concerned, apart from Burns, there was only one other source of seeing Scots words written down, and that was in D.C. Thompson, Oor Wullie and the Bruins.
That's right.
And that's who you picked up on Crivens and Jings and I Help My Bob. That's right.
That's my understanding of Scots very much. But interestingly, in my head, Piri Wally and the Bruins always had a Shetland accent.
Yeah. Well, the other thing about when you were growing up, you see, my mother actually saw education and speaking proper as our way of getting out of poverty and the slums. And if I would come in the door, dashing in the door, and my mother would say, "Where are you going?" "I'm just going to the lavvy." She'd say, "Oh, look, the only job you'll get speaking like that is gutting fish. If you want to get a good job, you've got to speak proper." And you wouldn't have got into the banks, the city chambers or the civil service if you weren't able to speak proper English.
And the other point about Oor Wullie and the Bruins being written in Scots is that it was written by Dudley D. Watkins, who was an Englishman.
Is that right?
Yes.
And I used to do this, the Bruins, in school with the kids. And it was always... it was trying to get the children to locate where Oor Wullie was set, or the Bruins particularly, because of the words, if there was any key words. So the kids in Edinburgh and Leith always assumed that it was Glasgow. They always that's what they jumped to because Paul worked in the dockyards, etc. But it was eventually you got them round to looking at the words like Bairn, the Bairn. Is not a Glasgow word, that would have been Wayne. So that helped to identify the East Coast, you know, for them. So that was a linguistic exercise that we used the Bruins for.
Do you think there was some kind of identity confusion then? The fact that an Englishman was writing it, he used words like Kerns and Jings. Are those Dundee words?
They must have been Dundee words for him because he was based in Dundee, yes. But another thing about that particular subculture, if you want to call it that, was that there were no kilts. Oor Wullie wears dungarees. Black dungarees all the time.
And is there no kilts in Dundee? Is that not a big thing?
Well, I don't know about in Dundee, but in the actual comics there were no kilts.
I would have thought working class Scots, you know. I mean, the kilt was... It was considered a garment for somebody a wee bit better off, you know.
Somebody was in the Scouts.
Ah, or the Scouts. You got away with it if you were in the army. That was the first time I got a chance to wear a kilt. No, that was designed for it. But what he's saying is quite right. You know, see, I'm tending to bring the common folk into this more, because that's where you'll find the remnants of the old Scots. Even to this day, with all the changes. I mean, coming from I was lucky enough to get a university education for what it was worth. But imagine my surprise, and it was genuine surprise, when I graduated and got teacher training, I went to teach in a comprehensive secondary down in a house in Skene, that here were the pupils on their own, among themselves, talking the same way I did when I was their age. And that was a long time before it. They were still using it. And when they addressed you, of course, they were a wee bit more careful, you see, because after all, they were going to have to write what they were saying down at one point, and you had to remind them, you know, that the employer that they went to for an interview, no matter what their qualifications was, you speaking the way you're speaking, it's not going to get him excited at all.
Part of the change of you, myself, going into education was that you had mature people going. And in the 70s, it was much more acceptable to speak in your regional accent. And that was advocated in the teacher training college, so that we'd have teachers who were particular teachers who you know went out of their way, you know, to speak often, you know, kind of in colloquial language, and actually encourage the kids to speak in that way. So, and kids were introduced then for the first time to register. So they were told it was okay to use this, you know, one way for the head teacher. It's okay for to have a playground. So they were kind of invited to see language in a broader sense.
We're a super blast of John's Morningside accent there, Jimmy. Jimmy, can you give me a blast of your accent?
My accent?
Yeah, say something you typically say to your family.
I've not really got an accent, have I?
I have.
Oh, you're just making that up.
No.
We're just saying it because it's true then.
How would you define your accent, Jimmy?
Well, actually, it's changed a bit. Well, see, that changed. Well, when I was young, I was low and heated. It changed, I would say, changed. But later on, there was a big influx for the West. And I palled about with some boys from Airdrie. And I sort of went to a West Country accent, but I got rid of that. So.
Where is Loanhead in relation to Leith? Where is Loanhead?
5 miles from Edinburgh, centre to centre. It's a. Have you heard of Straighton Park? Terrible. Well, it's just a mile for Straighton. That's where Parriff and Young had made petrol. That was years ago. All these places were Red Bings. That was Shale Oil.
Yeah. I tried to pitch a programme to Radio Scotland. It was a really interesting programme with the shale oil industry. Anyway, I'll try again. Can anybody give you a good blast of Leith accent? How folk would normally speak?
Well, could I just say, I was actually doing a creative writing class recently in Musselburgh. The woman comes from the slums of Leith like me, but she's gone up, she stays in Inveresk now. And she was trying to write, and I said to her, there was one sentence, and it had, you're labouring under a misapprehension if you think I'm going to bend to your will. And I said, well, if that was in Leith, all they'd have said was, awane by all your heat. And that's exactly it. And when I actually do a creative writing class and they want to write about their working class background, if they've actually forgotten it, I tell them to go on a bus or stand at a bus stop, and that's where you hear it again, and you get the rhythm there and you get all the words. My granny was probably one of the last pure Lowland speakers, so I was actually quite fortunate that I was influenced a lot by her.
How did she speak?
Well, if you would go in, she'd probably say, I'm trying to think, and she'd say, oh, what are you doing out in a day like this for, hen? Oh, it's no for man or beast. And that would be when it was snowing outside and it was cold, and then she would look at your coat and it would be all threadbare, and she would take her only shawl off the nail of the door and wrap it round you and pin it with her hairpin. And that, you know, I would need to really think about all the things that she would have said. And she was always making kale in a pot and gut and herring.
What's kale in a pot?
It was soup in a pot. She would be gut and herring and doing all things like that and making sure that the lavvy was clean and we didn't get any germs. And she was just a wonderful woman, really.
And you mentioned there that you encourage folk you're teaching to get on a bus. Do you think folk are is the local accent here in danger to the extent that folk would need to get on a bus to remind themselves of who it sounds?
Aye, because it's the television. The soaps have actually, the people that watch, well, and I have to say I don't watch the soaps, EastEnders and what's the other one, Coronation Street and not so much River City. And that actually, I think the children from an early age are influenced by television. That there's not
because it's Friends. Yeah. And yeah. I mean the Americanism.
Yeah.
and American accent,
yeah. And that, you know, it's again coming back to storytelling and, you know, speaking to your children, having a conversation with them. I mean, my granny, every time I went down, she was telling me stories. And so that was how where you learned your accent and your words and everything was from your granny.
I tried to get, check out some of the words from my youth with my grandchildren. And words that we would have used in the house would have been press for a cupboard, a bunker, and it's worktop now, lobby, tall boy, you know, that's just a drawers now, lavvy, scaffy, that was a scavenger on the streets, and street cleaners, rubbers for plimsolls, I think that's one of your ones, simmer is your vest, and for instance, when you're in Glasgow, you would talk about a close, but down in Leith, we always call it the entry. When you went up a tenement stair. Things like eating were, I was talking to someone recently, and I was talking about lair, and they didn't have a clue what lair was, and we would buy lair in the same way that you buy corned beef for that, and lair was cow's udder, which was actually, you know, so, sort of cut and just sold as a cold meat.
I have never heard of
it. Yeah, that's udder, so that's layer. Layer was part of it. So
what Noel was saying there, and Jimmy, they were on the same thing, really, the aspect of regional accent, you know, and that's important. When I spoke about at school being corrected, it wasn't an Oxford or a public school voice that was correcting me. I mean, all our teachers weren't English. They were Scots, and they had accents too. But the accent, the language seemed to survive the accent. I mean, you don't have to know about Sean Connery to understand that. They were speaking Scots, all right. English, but with a Scots accent. And it didn't seem to interfere with the meaning or the pronunciation of the words. And talking about accents, what Jimmy's saying there about, it's Lone Head, Jimmy, isn't it? Lone Head.
Lone Head, yeah.
Well, we, even as kids, we became aware of what accent meant. We never used the word. But when we went to secondary, other voices were heard. Voices from the kids out with Edinburgh, Yelmerton, Loanhead. And then later on, when I got involved in sports, boxing in particular, they would come in from Loanhead and turn it. Oh, where you come from? What? And it was sing-song accent. And when you would hear them shouting, if they were shouting against you or for you, whatever it was, you know, or for their man, you could hear it very strongly. And I still hear it now and again, that regional, which is a wonderful thing, because I think Edinburgh is unique. And, well, in a way it is, because although you've got all this upper and lower language in Edinburgh, which you certainly do, I mean, you can just need to open your mouth in Edinburgh. Worse than London, of course. And you've either got people looking up at you or down at you. Whatever. But in Jimmy's case, we weren't towards the youngsters, of course, because they were different, you know.
That's what I love it. I mean, when I think of Edinburgh accent, I think of this and that, you know. I suppose it's more Fife, that is it, I'm thinking of. I'm a bit confused. Is it quite sing-songy, Jimmy? Is it quite sing-songy, the way you speak? Sing-song,
I no, I didn't think so.
No.
I maybe goes up and down, but no, sing a song, I don't think.
Like
I've never been mistaken for a Chinaman.
No. Tell me, have any of the rest of you done like Noel's done and thought about words that you use that maybe didn't feature on the diagram? Can we cover them first and then we'll go on to the diagram after that?
Well, I did notice something about 20 years ago. I did a wee bit teaching as well, and words tended to come in from gypsy children who might be in a school for a year. And the kids from the town would pick up on some of these words. One word, under what you do to hit hard, pagger. To punch hard, that's pagger. And I think that's a Romany word. But I could be wrong with that. And there's another one. If you give me a second, I'll just find it.
Gadgie was another one referring to just a person, usually somebody was daft. Barry was the other
one. Another word was Barry. That meant good, you know, Barry.
Barry was meant good or great from 20 years ago, and the opposite was Shan. You know, that's bad. So if you say something was Barry, that was good or great. If you say that's Shan, that's bad. We don't want it.
But that's 20 years ago.
That was from 20 years ago, yes.
What would they do that now?
I don't think so. It just
an alternative street vernacular now, because I was talking to my daughter. She actually works. She worked in the drug place on Leith as a helper. And she says there was a complete language that they had which helped to, you know, kind of keep what they were talking obscure from people that were listening. So she's got a complete list of words which she just came out the top of her head, which I've never had heard before, and which there's no derivation as far as I can see.
So these are words that the drug
words
community...
Words which she was using.
A
complete vocabulary, almost.
Can you give us the examples?
Twirls equals keys. Mort was woman. Screeve was a car. Keir was a house. Hires was money. Flatty meant a straight peg. Naggins was self. Porous was pocket. Yak was eyes. Lantle meant you were clueless. Juggle was a dog. Chan was a guy. Barry was great. And so she had a list, and that was just the top of her head. So there was an alternative vocabulary. When we were at school as well, teaching, the children used eggy language. And I could never, it was always too complicated for me. I think the children substituted egg for vowels, and they would make up sentences which they became very proficient at, but excluded people who didn't know it. And as a teacher, I was one of those. I can always remember that.
And were these kind of sub-languages associated with deviance?
Yeah. It was just an exclusive language. It was a peer group language. So they excluded, you know, excluded adults. Just in the same way that would exclude, you know, whoever you don't want to listen to. Presumably that would come from prison, I should imagine, you know.
Actually, the word mort, I know, is a traveller's word.
Is that a traveller's word? Right, so, well, whether, you know, that could be, you know, traced back. But I couldn't, you know, decide for them.
Anybody else got any words?
No, you're near stupid.
Just sitting doing my cables going wrong.
Sorry. That's it, stupid. Glake it. Uh-huh. And then... dull wet weather, dreesh.
Right.
If you're pleased about something, you're fair away with yourself.
Right. That's a good one.
Someone who thinks they're great, they think they're nice more drink. the appreciation of someone doing well, you're going your dinger.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Uh-huh. An expression of exasperation, och, gee.
That's an important little one. Aye. We use more than we think about.
Someone expecting too much, you want jam in it. And a frown is the glower.
That's a good. A lot of those are not on the list. That's a really good list. Anybody else got ones that aren't on the diagram?
To come back to what Millie was saying, another phrase was away and champ your tatties. And that's advice you would give in anger to somebody who's annoying you, suggesting that the mashing of potatoes is more important than what they are doing.
I was talking to an old a lady in one of the nursing homes that I go to who has early Alzheimer's, but her long-term memory is good, and they'd gone out for their tea, and I says to her, how did you get on, Aggie? Oh, she says, it was great, hen. She says, the fish was hanging off the plate and the chips were made with tatties just out the grunt. And I thought, that's somebody all up. It was the oven chips. The thing that I thought in this one, you see the insane, they said they were either a heed banger or they were near the full shilling. I mean, you wouldn't have said insane. No.
Is there anything else anybody else come up with? No, on the diagram.
Well, dub was the always meant a puddle, a dike for a wall. Ben the house. Ben the kitchen. The, you know, I mean, through in the kitchen. Messages for shopping, I think that's probably universally Scots. And a guider. Well, we children, the laddies played on the street with a cart, a go-kart. Expressions, someone says, it was so.
Sorry, just
it was, I was so. It was so. my father, when he was at the table and he wanted something, he would say, "See the salt." He would not say, "Would you pass the salt, please?" He would just, "See the salt," or "See the tool," and that. So the swear words. The swear words that were part acceptable in our house were sod and get. These were words. They never used Lord's name in vain, or they didn't F and C. Bastard, bugger, was, you know, these were acceptable swear words. But get and sod was what my father used. And again, when you're tired, another expression would be I'm buggered. You know, and that wasn't a sexual connotation, that just meant you were tired.
Yes, I recognise some of them, Noel. You've never mentioned different things anyway. Apart from syntax and grammar, which does make a big difference to individual languages, I found anyway, I wonder if anybody else did, was the tendency, more than a tendency, when I was a kid, of older people to come away with sayings that seemed to sum up a situation. It seemed to save them an awful lot of unnecessary words and talk. Sayings like, they needn't be particularly Scots, but they were inclined to be. Things like, as it was happening not that often, a young girl being in the family way, you see, or pregnant, you would get often coming from some of them anyway. She's got a bun in the oven. When you were a kid, you didn't know what that meant. It's a bun in the oven. Or if you were, for example, dealing with a situation that was maybe sad, you know, it would come to scene again, you know. My mother, for example, often used to cry, sometimes anyway, when I got into bother, you see, I'd be brought to the house, usually, and I'd get in and then she'd make an attempt to chase me around the table and then never caught me, of course. And then she would sit down and she would just say, "Look at me, you know," and I'd be looking, and she would start to cry. Of course, that was the worst thing she could do, you see. And I'd go across there, and then she'd look up at me and laugh. And she would say, "If I didn't laugh, I would cry." Sayings like that. And another one was, she would say, "For somebody going through a calamity, oh well, it's an ill wind that blows no good." Sayings like that, or a couple who were, it wasn't uncommon, who were married couple who were falling out with each other, you know, hell going on in their house, and that would be their advice, was, and sometimes they didn't need to finish the saying, it was, "Well, they've made their bed," and she didn't need to say the next part, "and I'll just have to lie in it." But the saying did it, and to me, I often think it did save them an awful lot of formal language and articulation just by saying it, because they all nodded, they all knew what that was to do, what it meant, that kind of thing. Sayings, not always Scots, but just where somebody else would more fluently go to town on the language, you see? Bum. Summed it up like that.
If you fell and hurt yourself, and I would be crying, and my mother would say, "Aye, well, the more they greet, the less you'll pee." And that was the sympathy you got. And the other one was, "One skittery coo likes another." And my granny's great one was, which really today I think, you were right, Granny, was she would say, "When dirt rises, it blinds you."
Well, I don't know if either of those things would mean skittery coo likes another.
Somebody that's a sort of drunk and loose and bad, they like to go around with a pal that's just the same. And the more you greet, the less you'll pee, you know that. The tears are coming down your face, so you'll certainly not be peeing, will you? Because it has to come from somewhere. And if dirt rises, it blinds you. It's somebody that gets up and they forget where they came from. And they like Hayes and Bookie, Mrs. Bucket, and that's it. The other words that we used to use was, they never said head lice, they always said pogies. No, pogies. And somebody that was scabby had impetigo. Scabby.
Scabby. Mm-hmm. I remember that one.
I agree with John. There was lots, the sayings. And in fact, the last time at the forum, I was going to suggest that we started writing down all the sayings because you hear them less and less now.
I was thinking of that, you know, and I keep now and again when I've got time, I scribble something down. that, and I said, I'm going to start for that. And then I'll visit a sister or another old brother, and they'll say something. And I said, Jesus, and it's always things that your mother said. Seldom the father. Father seemed to do most of his talking in the pubs about human affairs, you know, human relationships. Mm. It seemed to be always the women that had to deal with them. And they used these sayings, as I say, to sum them up. Not that they were great readers. Nor were they ignorant either. Oh, they could read enough, okay. Some were quite smart at it. But they more talking than reading. As I say, where they got the sayings, which often interests me, I couldn't say. Whether they got it at school themselves, perhaps. You know, they didn't go to school. My mother, they went to school. Well, no, that ancient. But they must have picked them up there. And yet, when I thought about the sayings, I would think, where would they get that, you know? What book would that be in? It's not a Shakespeare quote or anything like that.
I've still got a word that my mother used, which I've never heard. I don't know if it's Scots or what. But it was douk for your backside. She used douk. And she was the only one ever using that. But there was always expressions which were just in your house that came about as part of, you know, your particular life experience. One that we have and my children use now is if you were going for butter or margarine and you missed and it fell onto the table. In our house you always say, oh, Dodie White. And that's because my mother had a visitor once, and this guy must have been half drunk, and he was trying to get the butter. After a while, he just gave up, and he lifted the thing and threw it onto his bread and started spreading. But that has just gone in our family as a Dodie White. So that's the name of the guy's name. So it just becomes your own language that's created, you know.
Knives and forks again. If you dropped a knife, that'll be a woman coming. Or if you dropped the fork, that'll be a man coming. Was the other way around? I can't remember now.
I think knife's a man coming.
A knife's a man coming. Yeah.
Brilliant. Can we return to the diagram? I'm just conscious of time. We'll never get around it otherwise. Right, okay. So we only kind of did a few. I mean, unwell and tired. What about pleased?
Chuffed. Mm-hmm. Chuffed is pleased.
Chuffed. I've got chuffed.
Chuffed.
Don't worry, if you kind of think of any words, that's fine as well, because that tells me something about...
Well, for hot, I've got plotting. Which plotting. I suppose if it's put into English, it would be plotting. I don't know where it comes from, but plotting is really a very hot.
And for pleased, it would have been glad. Glad or glad.
Cold.
Cold.
Nithered. Nithered. Nithered.
I still use freezing cold.
Very much. Always cold. Cold. No cold.
Or I'm perishing. Perishing. Perishing is another one.
I've got two for annoyed. Bleezing and crabbit.
And I've got beeling. For annoyed, beeling. Aye. Beeling, boiling.
Do you use these words, or are you just kind of thinking of it ones that fall?
I'd use blutton. I'd use nithered.
In the pudding club. Pregnant in the pudding club.
Good, Jimmy.
And there's a rude one as well, but I don't want to say it.
What,
that's the one.
Somebody that's not too bright, they know the false shilling.
Aye, that's a good one, Jimmy. What about annoyed?
Biling, angry, ballistic is a contemporary one.
That's good, so. Spans the generations.
Annoyed. I've got bailing. Fair bailing. That's mad again. What do I think got most of them? Oh, playing truant, skiving or dodging.
We would say skip the school.
I've got kipping. Just kipping. Mm-hmm. And for the annoying, I've got peeved.
Going off at the deep end as well is another one. Going off at the deep end for being angry or annoyed.
Another thing about language, the Scots today, as in the past, when they went around the world to the old British Empire, they brought back more than souvenirs. They brought back language as well. Mm. And a word that I still use for sleep is charping. Charping in me pit. And that's an Indian word. Charpoy is a bed. Mm.
That's really interesting. You'd use that?
Yeah, I still use it today, yeah. But that's only because I was out in the East for National Service.
Been associations with the bed, because pajama was the other one, isn't it? That's another Indian one.
Bungalow.
Yeah.
Dungarees, they're all Indian ones.
Childe, move. And they still, I still, they use that one. Childe.
Yeah.
And my father brought it back from India, like Bungalow. These words, like they brought their war language back, French as well, and even I was at the Far East when I came home, I was using words, you know, Indonesian words, and Korean words, you know, which meant not all nice things, you know, but you even wee songs and so on. So you're right, John, that influx of all these out with, you know, the experience, other countries, well, we're a Mongol nation anyway, aren't we, with so many different names from different countries and languages. I would agree with that.
What
when a man's drunk, it's fair stoughton.
Do you mind there was an advert on a while ago that said, aye, it's stoughton stuff. Do you ever mind that?
Oh, well, that's also, if the rain's coming heavy, it's stoughton. Mm-hmm. Stoughton's off the ground.
And a stoughton used to be a lassie that was really, you know, a sort of... Oh, very attractive, very beautiful. I am like Zeta Jones. I mean, the old man would say she's a stotter.
Stoughton is good as well. That's when, you know, it's stoughton stuff. So it's very good. Yeah.
Going back to the Empire, I don't mean the Empire Theatre, I mean the British Empire. And they're getting personal. The word insane, Dulali Tappet. Dulali was from India.
Dulali. Aye.
India. Bangalore, I think. Dulali during the Second World War, and we use it like, oh, he's the lally, she's the lally, you know, brother or sister, you know, and that's the way not that long ago since I found out, you know, an old soldier, oh, no, he wasn't talking about him, what I was talking about, aye, he's away now, aye, says we went to there and we didn't again, where we were, they were going to Burma, you see, and then it was near Madras, I think, and there was this camp here. And all the mattresses, and they're all filled with lice and everything. And they would drive you by me. In fact, they would drive you to Lally.
It must have been a kind of sanatorium-type camp, wasn't it? Before it got that reputation.
And so they used that word, you know, the Lally.
What about, let's move on to what you do, to throw something.
And chuck it.
Fling.
Fling. Okay.
Play through. We've kind of touched on that. We've got skiving, kipping. Anything else?
Skip. To skip school. We never said skive.
Skip school.
We said skip.
Female part.
Okay. Sleep.
Sorry. Chirping. Chirping when we sleep. And incidentally, that's Sanskrit, that word chirping. It's kwaha pwad, which means four legs, the four legs on the bed. I just thought I'd throw that in there because I got it from the dictionary.
Are you really happy doing your homework, John?
I know. I didn't do the homework, John. I'm sorry. No, I would still even say the day, oh, I'm away for a wee kip to sleep.
Kip, Malia. Kip, yeah. Here it is.
Well, I like a wee kip after my lunch or my dinner, as it used to be in my day.
Having a kip out for a count in the land of Nod, catching a few Z's or having a nap.
Oh, you're very in with
the
crowd.
That was... It was. The other one was for to play truant was dogging, but that's not an Edinburgh one.
That's got another meaning nowadays.
Yeah. And somebody that's left-handed, it's Corrie Pod.
Or Corrie Jukett.
Corrie
Jukett.
Corrie Jukett, Corrie
Fisted. Both of them. So you take your pick.
Pick and mix, yeah. Mm. To play a game.
I couldn't get that one at all. I was totally lost on that one. I couldn't figure that one out at all.
You give us one.
I can't think of anything either.
No?
Well, I asked my husband last night, and he says, you mean jine in? So I suppose if you went down the stairs and they were playing a game of football, and they would say, you want to jine in, and you would jine in and just go into the game. I actually couldn't find anything to play.
I couldn't. But talking about games, there were two names that I remember, two words that I remember from the 40s and the 50s, and that's Levoy and Cheney. And the old game of Tig, when you touch somebody, and they were hit, and then they had to run around touching somebody else. It was expanded into Cheney, where a whole chain of people, boys, would run around the slums, try to touch everybody else. And if you got touched, you had to join the chain until everybody was in the chain, and that was game over. Levoy was the same, but you didn't make a chain. You only had to have two people there.
As a child, being confused when you had, or you read English books and it says, you're going to be he, for Het. And that was a real kind of confusion as for me as a child, you know. And you recognise that was a very different language, he and Het.
What's that?
He is, you're going to be it or he in a game, you know. You're the person at the centre.
The game I remember well is the kids, they were mixed, you know. The boys played games with the girls, but usually they played different sexes as well. But the Hesse was, they all played the Hesse. That was the one where we got a chance to play with the girls, you see. Hesse. Do you remember Hesse?
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek. Why they call it Hesse? I haven't focused. But that's what we knew as. And the Levoy. Oh, yeah. A Levoy, that was a shout, and that meant you could, you know. In other words, you stood like that in the street with a hand over your eyes, and you don't look, and all your pals scattered everywhere. And then you shouted, a Levoy, and then you were put your hand in and looked about you when you're looking for him.
Hide and seek, basically.
It was more or less hide and seek, except that you could run great lengths, you know. Hiding, all sorts of... Oh, much rougher. Boys' game, that's what I'm saying. Some of the games were a bit rough for boys. Peavers, of course, you could never play peavers if you were a boy. They get hey doots about you. The peavers, you know the peavers? Well, they chalked out a frame on the pavement with white chalk.
Beds.
Squares. Ah, and peavers bed. And then, what was it, a blackening tin, an empty tin? And you hopped it, and the girls hopped it on one knee and one leg.
And then you used to kick it up and see how far you could get it up. And then the squares were 1, 2, 3, and then there was a double 1, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and then it went that way.
And that's hopscotch.
And well, hopscotch, what you would call it now. But we played peavers. And the boys played football, and they were all good footballers. That's what's wrong with the Scottish team today. They're not actually getting in there from when they're 7 years old. And the back green stuff, you can't play in the streets now because of the cars. And there's not enough
lone-headed
men.
No enough lone-headed men.
They're not actually teaching it, the teachers are all scared to take football at the weekend because if the bairn breaks its leg, the mother sues them. Mm-hmm. And we're losing the place here, and our bairns are not getting to play. And that's where we need to go back to getting the 7 years old playing. And the lassies, they all sang.
The
7 year olds would make a better job now. Mm-hmm. And it's going to be years, and it would take years because they'll need to go back and start with them at 7 year old and start training them all the way up.
No more chances. Me seeing this good team, you know.
No.
You never
what about
know.
To hit hard? You mentioned one earlier on.
Oh, yeah, that was
Clout.
That was Pagger.
Clout.
A clout, you know, aye.
Smack it a shot. Thump it. Yeah.
Bluter.
Ah. Bluter. Not just for drunk, yeah. Okay, Rich.
Well off.
How can you get that one at all? No, just Rich was Rich.
Real off.
Stinking Rich, loaded bags of money.
Right, I'm just looking for that word. Oh, yes, loaded. I've got loaded there. Loaded as well.
How about unattractive at the top of that list? Plugug.
Unattractive.
For unattractive, plugug. And it was also suggested migging.
Pig face. Or ugly. Pig face or ugly.
Nail painting.
Nail. Oh, I like that. I forgot about that.
Mm-hmm. Nail painting.
That's what I've got. Nail painting.
I've got plain Jane.
What about the opposite?
Look,
an attractive person.
Bonnie. A stutter.
Definitely a stutter, yeah.
Mm. I've had that stutter, haven't we, already?
Aye.
Yeah. Aye. We'll have another stutter.
You never have too many stutters, can you?
A stunner, cracker, peach, a doll. They were all, yeah.
I just got pretty, though. She is pretty.
What about lacking money, the opposite of rich?
Skint.
Hard up.
I think it's a skint I've got to.
You're right, skint. Yeah.
Skint, I've got skint. Skint, hard up.
I'd skint or brassic lint for the rhyming slang.
I've got brook here, brook. Stony brook.
Good. What about, oh gosh. gosh, we've had a couple of good ones already for pregnant. We had a bun in the oven for John, and we had a pudding in the pudding club.
And the pudding club, by the way. Not pudding, it's pudding.
Pudding, pudding club. Anything else, anybody else? In the pudding club.
Where was that?
Up the steps.
In the club, just expecting. Yeah.
John, do you have any?
Just what I said before.
What about insane?
Heed banger. Know the fool shillin.
What I mentioned earlier, Dulali Tappet.
Jimmy, anything else for insane?
Insane. No, I think I've just got. What was it? That's this wonderful memory.
You've got craft.
Daft, I'm mad.
Aye.
Mad, I think.
Nutter. Nutter.
Bam, eh?
Bam, that's an interesting one. It's very Scottish.
Bam, eh?
Off your head. Mm-hmm. Off your head would be.
Now they're rolling out.
I think you're rolling out, Jimmy. What else? Lacking money, drunk. Pregnant. We've done enough on drunk, do you think? I don't think we have. Drunk.
Oh, we had Stoughton. We're Stoughton for that.
Plastered.
Mm-hmm. Sozzled.
Pissed. Pissed.
Steaming, just steaming.
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 Oh, four sheets to the wind. Bevied. Pissed, is it? Yeah.
It's very rich one, isn't
yeah,
it?
There's yeah, loads yeah.
Moody.
Crabbit.
Sour-faced.
You just come in a tiny bit. I'm just not quite thinking about. Just if you move your chair in a tiny bit, that's going to fit
me. Moody, sour-faced.
Temperamental.
Well, if it's getting near the Scots words, moody, you're getting near it there, but I thought that moody always meaning sort of crabby and so on, didn't always mean that. Sometimes it meant, you know, high. And so we used to just say up and down. What do we say? Oh, I mean, it's either up or down, you know. That's what we meant by moody.
Unpredictable, really.
Up and down.
Yeah.
Well,
what about
swinging? Swinging, you know, they're swinging one way and the other, Lebo. Mm-hmm. He's swinging.
That insane, you know, I think I said it. Know the false shillin, or away with the fairies.
Two good ones, Jimmy, yeah, that's great. What about going inside and outside to rain lightly?
Drizzle.
Smittle.
What did you say?
Smittle.
You're the first person I've heard say that, actually.
Is that, do you say that in Shetland?
No, but I've heard, and I really like it, a smirring.
I think I say drizzle. Drizzle. For raining lightly. Drizzle, aye. Drizzle. That's all fine, isn't it?
You it to rain heavily.
Well, a sudden downpour would be a plump.
That's what my mum uses.
And that's Dutch, from plumping to burst.
Really?
Yes.
Bucketing, raining cats and dogs.
Oh, no, simply bucketing, yeah, bucketing. I still use it, bucket.
Teeming. And you'd hear it the day it's teeming. Aye, teeming down.
Oh, I haven't heard that one before.
Again for that.
Nothing in there. Toilet. That's
Burn.
Cludgy.
Lavy.
The bog.
Or is this,
Toilet, Jimmy, toilet.
The loo.
Oh, that's too polite now.
Yeah, well, I can't help it. Just, I mean, with my wife, she belonged to Dalkeith, and of course, her mother tried to get her to talk polite, you see. And when she was out and she was talking ordinary to Dalkeith, sister Ken Betty, she used to go back and tell her mother, that's her sister. Chris wasn't talking gentry. Wasn't polite. She wasn't talking gentry. So she clipped on her and that was her in trouble.
What does clipe mean, Jimmy?
Telltale.
That's a good one.
That would be bog, cludgy, or lavy.
I put lavy, yeah.
Lavy.
Good. What about...
Closet was another one.
Wow. What a closet.
The narrow walkway between or alongside buildings.
A vinyl.
Is that got some foreign origin?
I don't know about that, but there's a vinyl up in... Well, generally the vinyl.
The vinyl, yes.
They have closes in Edinburgh. You know, you've got fish market close, flesh market close, and all of them.
Bend, wind, where's close?
Well, in Leith it was the Tolbooth wind, you know, the wind through the walkway, through.
So that's what you mean, as opposed to a path, just a pathway.
There's one here that I couldn't get. Kit of tools. I've only got tool kit down. Is there anything else?
That's all I've got. I can't think of anything.
A work bag. A work bag. No.
Just gear.
Well, as a tradesman, we used the word gear, you know. Plumbers and those were big tools and instruments did use a toolbox. It was always a toolbox. You got your box toolbox. But we as painters, you know, we were sort of the bottom of the barrel, except culturally, of course. And we had brushes and things and so on. It could be easily carried. And that was, you got the gear with you. And that was it. Well, we used just gear, you know. But you're right about the toolbox, it was always mentioned.
But you suspect there must be a good word for that in other, in trades.
I don't know if you can hear this, but I have nobody bought
hip hair. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's significant in itself. The trades are a little bit different on oil, because there were other trades that, you're very lucky if you're serving a trade, incidentally. You were, you know, a labour aristocrat. Brothers that didn't get a chance, weren't too happy about that. But there was a difference in employment. You know, you're dangerous in the winter because you lost days through rain. The other one was that you didn't have to buy tools. You know, the mother, it was one boy big in the trade, was, I've got to buy his tools. I've got to buy a box of tools for him. And he would have to buy the box of tools. Whereas a painter, you could just, you know, slip in there and a brush here, a brush there, whatever. The employer supplied it all. That was the point.
Were you a painter as well?
Yes, I was a painter and a sign writer, and I moved to decoration. But so you had your special brushes and so on for certain jobs you did. But you called that your gear. And it was smaller. Didn't have to lug a big toolkit across. I was going to go in charter. I have to go in the van. You just carried that and you got on the bus and you went where you were to go.
Did you do kind of house painting or only sign writing
of
fine art?
Oh, well, I did. We went to art school. When I was serving my time, it was 6 years, and you had to go to night school. At art college, and you went to that college up in Lady Lawson Street there, and you went there and you did drawing, you did still life, you did all the alphabets, Trajan, Roman, and you did all the models all around you up there. And there were some very clever teachers there, actual artists and decorators, you know, long experience, and they taught you that. And then eventually you got a day school, you see, where you went up for day for drawing, great. And so it was. One or two painters didn't make it, but they were sort of frowned on in the shop, and they weren't too happy, an employer, if you didn't take advantage of it. And so that's what happened to us, and so we had a good grounding in the arts, you see, and it left us the opportunity to move to a better firm with bigger work and more decorative work, like the New Town, all that cornice and all that decoration, lettering in the theatres, lettering in the hotels, all that. So it was, but nevertheless, the tools were small, and fine, and so easy to cut it about.
Oh,
you asked me that, incidentally.
Yeah, no, it was very interesting. I was interested in that, because I don't think any of the rest you got experience of trade or working with
tools. There is a phenomenon amongst trades that you can usually have a tool you can't buy in a shop. And in the electrician's trade, you've got something called a hickey. And you make this up from a heating engineer's pipes. It's a length of pipe, the thread on the end, and you've got a T-piece, and you put that on the other end of the thread, and you use it to bend pipes. You just stick it in the end and bend the pipe, put an offset on the pipe. But you can't buy them in a shop. You make them up for yourself on the sites. It's called a hickey, H-I-C-K-E-Y.
Is that a Scotch word?
It could be.
Will they use that now, I wonder?
I don't know. No, John. It's up in the 60s.
It's an Irish name, because I've got a pal called John Hickey. He lives at Leith.
What about the long, soft seat in the main room?
That has to be the settee.
Well, I thought the settee, and I phoned my sister and I asked her, and she says to me, a satchel bed.
A
a saddle bed.
That would be nice.
I know. I'd never heard it before, but she said, "Oh no, that's a saddle bed."
It's and not
that's a lounge,
is it?
It's a bed, a soft seat on the top, but it gets made down like a bed city. And she said a saddle bed.
Oh.
Bed city to me. That's the only thing I think of.
Would you say a couch?
Couch.
Or a sofa.
Couch or city.
Sofa. I've got down sofa.
What about that's the main good. Room of the house that might have that seat in it with a TV in it?
Living room.
Sitting room.
Sitting room.
Lounge.
The living room, aye.
So
please.
Those are the words you'd use in your own house?
Well, they've gone posh if they've got in the sitting and sitting rooms.
Yes.
You've got.
There's only two rooms in the place.
Well, it's
the living room and the sitting room.
A sitting room was something you want Morningside.
There's a class connotation here, because if you're talking about the main room, I think you'll agree with me that if there was one room that was the room in the house, it was the kitchen. The kitchen. Oh, but that's just for cooking. Oh, no, it wasn't. All the talking was done in the kitchen. The table, right round the same table you ate off, they were cleared back. Visitors came in into the kitchen. Summer and winter, it was only later that this, for somehow, you know, maybe a boyfriend or a girlfriend coming up, sitting in the living room. And the living room was, well, we called it the big room, actually, to be honest, the big room.
Ben Hoos.
And there it was, Ben the big room.
Ben Hoos.
But the kitchen was the place.
It's interesting, my generational thing, my granny would say Ben, Button Bay, and then my mum, we lived in a really ordinary house, but mum still called it the sitting room and the linen cupboard and the cloak room and all this sort of stuff. I don't know if they thought it up.
Well, we got a man up, you know, them that the thing with the house and taxes and all the rest of it. What size is your house? We said, well, it's a kitchen, living room and two bedrooms. But you've got a sitting room. No, two bedrooms. He says, you must have a sitting room. You must have somewhere to sit. And we could not have two bedrooms. It had to be a bedroom and a sitting room.
Oh.
My grandmother's family never had that problem. She and her husband and her six sons and her two daughters lived in a single end with two bed recesses. Until the 1950s.
One room.
They'd call it a studio now, but it was, and what it was, you had six houses on, and that's in the tenements that were the slums that they've actually demolished back in the 1950s when we were all rehoused. And it was, I was born into luxury. There was six houses in Admiralty Street, as they say in Leith, and there was four single ends and two room and kitchens, and on the half landing that they'd call the mezzanine floor now, that was where the one lavatory was. And that was just one room, and there was a sink with a cold water tap, and that's all there was. And the range, the fire range, and everything went on in that one room. People, they like children, and people had, what, six, seven burns?
And they've had a hard time, haven't they? They've had a hard time.
Oh, I know. We've got a hard
key. Single end, you were lucky.
We shared a single end with four families. That's right.
He was living in the Anderson shelter.
No, but that particular house I'm talking about, well, that single end, it was in Advocates Close, across the road from St Giles Cathedral. Mm. And they had no water in the flat at all. That was out in the lobby. There was one toilet, a WC, for I think it was three families.
Well, you were lucky with a WC at that time, eh?
And there was gas. There was a gas for a gas cooker. But there was no electricity, so there was no carpets, because you couldn't have carpets without vacuum cleaners.
It was paving stain, eh?
It was just...
And the flare.
What about the candles? Sean, what about the candles and the candlesticks? When you hadn't a penny for the gas. And for the wee, what do you call it again? I was always breaking them. The mantle. The wee mantle. What about the bottom of the mantles in the stairs, Sean?
And when your mother would light it and it was broken, it was a neary, yellowy, blue flame. And if it was in the scullery and she had a sheep, he'd sitting on the bunker. Oh, It used to look absolutely horrendous. It was horrible.
But then again, the mantles in the stair. Mm-hmm. What about the metis coming up? Yeah. Breaking them, bottling them. Get the gas, take it out, and with the meths, a good shake, grass market cocktail.
Well, what would
take
that as drugs?
Away. Ah, they were away. And they would lie down on the stone, happy, and so. And the kid used to step over them, you see, till you saw the gas mantle, see, because you knew you'd get the blame of it. Sliding down the banisters and shoving your finger in it, which we never did, I never, anyway. But this was it, the methods, and then the next day you'd see them red, red face, walking in air again, till they got some water, and then they were away again, till the next night when the mantles would be put on. It was dangerous, because some of them forgot to put the gas off. You know, you see, you turned it, and they would turn it off and try to take the mantle off, poor souls, you know, and they break it. But they stuck the bottle up there all the same. I mean, they painted it when I was a kid.
To give you an example of generation gaps, my daughter's boyfriend's a computer expert, and I wanted my hard drive updated because I wanted to put some extra stuff on it, you know. I don't know how to do that, but he can open up the box and put an extra memory, and he did that for me. And it was all working. And he was trying to explain it to me. And he was losing me. I said, listen, I'm quite happy that it's working, but there's no point in trying to explain it to me because I came up in a house with a gas mantle. And he said, what's a gas mantle? Didn't he again? Never heard of it.
Stupid man.
And if you didn't have the penny for the gas, remember the meters, and it had a padlock on it, and the gas man came every so often to empty it. And if you maybe had 2 or 3 days, and then your mother would just actually break into the meter and get the pennies back out. Well, it was always somebody else that broke into the meter. It was never my mother.
It was a bonus, wasn't it?
We've done toilet, we've done rain heavily, we've done narrow, we've done soft seat, running water smaller than a river.
A burn. Burn,
yes. Burn.
All agreed on that. Let's move on now to the what you call them section. What about your mother to begin with?
Mammy.
Just ma. I would just say ma.
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 All in unison there.
Maybe she's me.
Grandmother.
Granny.
Gran. Gigi and Nana.
Granny, just granny.
Do you think that's a generational thing? I mean, folk have said these days, folk are posh and you have nannies and nana.
Oh, no. Didn't see any granny.
That was sophisticated.
Yeah. My grandchildren call different grandmothers different names, like Gigi or, you know, the distinguished now. There's 4 different.
No, his family were better.
That was granny's mother, great grandmother. It was Gigi.
Maternal. What about male partner?
I couldn't answer that one. Sorry.
My man. That's what I've got.
My man.
Mm-hmm.
Male partner.
Have you got a man?
You mean have I got a fairly? You mean have I got a fairly?
A man.
A fairly.
Oppo. I don't know. Oppo was one. Oppo. Buddy. I mean, a woman seeing a male partner or a pal. Like,
I think it means a woman seeing a male partner.
Male partner, yeah. Oppo or better half, which
I've
was...
I've never had Oppo before.
Oppo, yeah. That's it.
What are we going now?
We're going to go into friend next.
Oh, friend, did we do female partner? Did
no,
we?
Oh, well, do you want to do that new job? Let's do female partner.
No, I thought the corona. The wife.
The missus.
The missus.
Wife.
Do you mean a female partner? I've got a bird. Huh?
You and your birds, John.
Come on, a bird, eh? Incidentally, Noel came from a better class folk than we did, isn't that right, Millie?
That's right, yeah.
That explains some of the odd words he's using.
What would you say about that, Noel? Do you think that's true, or how does it work?
No, it's what you say. I'm probably trying to get a range of words as opposed to specifically dialect. Aye.
Okay, cool. Right. What about friend then?
Chum.
Mate.
Chum.
Mate or pal?
That's where I was wrong. It's oppo is for mate and pal or buddy.
Pal as well. Pal.
Baby.
Bairn.
Baby, Jimmy.
Hmm?
Baby.
Bairn.
Bairn.
A bairn or a babby.
Wayne. Wayne. W-E-N. Wayne.
No. We also use child. We use child a lot in our family, so the child, as opposed to the bairn, probably. Mm.
Good. Yeah. Let's see. Grandfather,
and your grandfather? Grandfather.
That's granddad.
Granddad or grandfather?
Granddad, grandpa, grandfather.
Oh, it was always grandpop, yes. In us anyway, grandpop they called him.
Okay, what about word for someone whose name you've forgotten? Something.
Oh, a thingamajig.
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 Or what do you might call it?
Thingamajig, yeah. That's right. Yeah. This thing there.
What do you call it? There is another one, isn't there? I can't remember what it is now.
We've kind of done kit of tools, haven't we?
Yeah.
Young person in cheap, trendy clothes.
Well, no.
Oh.
A skimmy.
A skimmy.
A skimmy.
Well, actually, I was trying to think about it, and I guess, again, it was suggested Birkie. It just means a young dandy man that thinks he's absolutely wonderful.
Is that short for something?
No, I don't think so. I think it's see you on Birkie Cod a law, doesn't it? Right. From Burns.
You can also have a cashy. But there's also a rude one.
Yeah.
Slightly rude anyway. I think it's from the West. I'm allowed to say this.
Yeah.
It's a young person in cheap, trendy clothes and jewellery, particularly a female, a wee hairy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I've got something like that, you know.
I know.
Somewhere.
And if they were chocolate, they would eat
theirselves.
No, the scheme is the best one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Describe a scheme to me.
The person who comes from a housing scheme. It would be someone who was very poor taste in clothes and everything.
So that's like local authority?
Cheap, yeah. Local authority housing. Yeah, from a housing scheme. Yeah.
Well, this word. For a young person in cheap, trendy clothes and jewellery. This word, we used a word, in perfectly innocent word. It became later on to sort of lower in its connotation. We just said some tart that. Tart. Aye. But then, and I noticed some authors wrote it, Somerset Maugham used it quite a bit in his reign, you know, about Sadie. How she was regarded as a tart. And we used it, tart. You got a tart? Yeah. It didn't mean that she was immoral or anything. Just meant that she was a young lassie, you know, doing herself up, you know, and obviously she wouldn't have the money to do it very well. But that was what she would be, sort of cheap. Later on, this. That's right. Later on, it, as I say, it became a bit smudgy, you know, a bit dodgy, nearing on a prostitute. And we stopped, we just didn't use it anymore.
My mother's expression would be for a young woman, she'd be common. Mm-hmm. Common would be, that meant.
Yeah. And the thing is, we were all common, but my mother would say that, now don't be common, because common was considered that they were all dressed up to go and catch the eyes of the GIs.
Common folk, it didn't mean that common sheep, you know.
And
they used that word a lot. Come into that.
I'm asking her where the cheap yens are about.
On the ones that used to go to
Fairlies. Oh, they went used to go to Fairlies. It's closed down now.
But folk like that, don't they? Often a lot of folk have said, they like to kind of be around that kind of folk.
No, not really.
Your mother would also say, Millie, when talking about commonality, she would also say about somebody, be talking about, say, of course, better class folk.
I know.
Her mother had been middle class, and she really objected that my granddad was an alcoholic and he'd taken her to the slums of Leith. And she would say, you know, if you said anything, she'd say, like I said, Patsy's got patent leather shoes for Christmas, and I was sitting cutting out cardboard soles. And she says, aye, but you're better class than Patsy. And that's really what matters. I mean, you've got damn all else to eat. You've got cardboard soles in your shoes, but your granny was middle class. It made all the difference. And they were great for class. The class was the thing.
Is that a big thing in Edinburgh, do you think?
Oh, it still is. Still is, aye. Yeah.
Especially with the schooling still,
because you've got all these schools, very good schools, Watson's, Heriot's and whatnot, but we eventually were rehoused, it was private houses on one side of the street, and our side of the street was corporation, and it was broader than the River Jordan, because the children on the other side of the street were not allowed to play with the children in the corporation houses, where they went to the corporation school, because they all went to fee-paying schools, and it's still a lot of snobbery in Edinburgh.
It's my goodness, education, you know. I mean, if in Edinburgh you want to, in this day and age, at this time, you want to get as close to, say, the remnants of the Scots language, the old Scots tongue, near the remnants of it, then you can sit down and figure it out without asking anybody. Find out where people are grouped in large communities whom we could call economically and socially disadvantaged. Doesn't matter. You got a place? Right. What about? Well, you go there and you'll find those Scots. Why there? Why there? Because it just happens to be that they're associated with the poor and the elites long ago. As I say, you know what they did with our Scots language? Out it went. We know when and how. And each act that did it. And that was it. And our elite did the same. So, you know, from 1603 Union of the Crowns right up to the Scottish independence, lost its independence, and from there on, when education spread among the masses, the language went, the common language, as near Old Scotch as possible, with all the wee influences moving in, you know, and the dialects that formed from it. Because you got a lot of mixed up with this language and dialect, you know, that dialects belong to a language first, and of course, then the better schools, of course, where the proper English and public school voices. Public school talking, a voice that exuded confidence and boldness. As I say, person opens their mouth, you can almost tell what housing scheme they come from, neatly.
And which end of the housing scheme they come from?
Yeah, you can tell from it. And the other thing that, by the fact that there was a schooling that had the snobbery, there was also in the Edinburgh Corporation where I actually worked, if you went to a certain school, a member of the golf club, and in the Masons, you could be the biggest idiot or heed banger, whatever you want to call them, and you would get promoted as you went along as a man. And that was a terrible thing. Like, my nephew is a lawyer in Leith. And he actually had to come out of the fiscal's office because he was Catholic. He knew that he could not be promoted as quick as a Protestant would be. And that was the fact.
When was that?
And we're only talking, actually been in his own business 25 years, and he realised then that he would need to go out, so now he's one of the big criminal lawyers. Ah, he is a criminal lawyer. A criminal.
You've got people from where I live, when they went for a job, talking about the 30s, older ones, going for a job, they would often, in exasperation, give their aunt's address, who maybe lived up in Nicholson Square, or Toll Cross, give their aunt's address rather than the Grass Market or the Westport, because it was a fact, you know. They would employ, yes, sit down, yes, you've got, oh yes, very good, bit of experience, right, name, McElvanny. Address? Cowgate. Oh yes. That's fine, Mr. McElvanny. We'll get in touch with you.
So is Cowgate a bad place to come from?
The Grass Market and Cowgate, Westport. Oh.
You came from the Cowgate? I used to go on holidays to the Cowgate.
I thought you were from the country.
I was going to say, John was talking earlier about, phrases that can encapsulate the whole idea. When you're talking about, you know, so the poorer class looking at, you know, the Morningside people, what they used to say was fur coat and nae knickers.
And that
summed up the, you know, the kind of impression of people that had aspirations but no real money, you know.
Well, pianos and kippers. Pianos and kippers.
Another thing about language, the use of the word ken, that's East Coast Scots. Mm. You don't get that all from the West.
Ken.
That word lights a lot too. Yeah. You know, I used to use it a lot. I was built up for it quite a bit.
Like. Some,
I like, I mean, you use it to.
But that's very common though, even like.
It's London as well.
London. It's totally like this and that, like.
But I'm talking about somebody trying to teach me how to speak good English when I was a man. Actually, and I'm talking about an elocution, a music teacher. You know, while you're at it, you could just, he's telling me about enunciation of words and so on, and pitches. And when you're at it, John, you use that word there, you know, you keep saying it, you know, like, yeah, yes, yeah, I just don't really need that, do you? It's been very nice, you see.
Can we just finish off this diagram? I'm kind of keen that we get through this and then we can talk about other stuff that's more interesting, maybe. Clothes. Just a second, my feet's crackling. Please.
Just time to unwind.
I know, lovely. Really must be here.
How do you know it's on?
Clothes.
Clothes.
What's what?
Clothes.
Clothes. Clothes.
Gear.
I just use the word clobber, you know. Good clobber.
Good. And trousers. Trousers.
Breeks.
Breeks.
Trousers.
Breeks.
Breeks or trousers.
Pants.
Strides.
Well, you two are a bit wee bit different than these lot. Is that because you're thinking about it?
That's what I'm thinking about.
Strides, my father used that word to look. Bring the strides boy here. Bring the boots. And you had to get all this stuff for him. Where's my strides? They didn't pick them up. Should have been ironed in so and so. Strides. S-T-R-I-D-E-S. Hmm. You got that one?
Yeah.
You heard it?
Yep.
And a child's soft shoes, one for P-E.
Rubbers.
Rubbers.
Rubbers, always.
There were gutties and there was also plimsolls. Trainers was the contemporary one.
It's the Jimmy's in Aberdeen.
Just rubbers, we just use rubbers.
I think we've got everything there. Hot, cold, and well tired, please annoyed. Thrill, play through, and sleep, play again, hit hard. Rich, do we do hit hard? We did.
One yep.
Time, yeah. Rich, left handed and attractive, and money drunk, pregnant, attractive, and insane, moody, rain. I think we've covered anything. Now, just anything else anybody would like to add? Anything you'd like to say in a good local accent or any kind of words that we've neglected?
No, I think
not. Can I just get you to introduce yourselves one more time now, just so we can use this at the end of the interview? Just tell me who you are, where you're from, how long you've lived there.
I'm Millie. I was born in Admiralty Street in Leith, and we all know it's Admiralty Street, but in Leith they give you extra eye. And I moved from there when I was an infant over to the Portobello area, and when I married, I stayed within the Portobello area.
And is Portobello kind of posh?
Well, the bit of Portobello that I stay in now is posh, because the Portobello Reporter did an article on me recently, and my neighbour rang the bell to say to me, "You said you've stayed in Portobello. Could I point out this is Duddingston?"
I'm John, and I was born in the St Leonard's district of Edinburgh, a place called Dumbadakes Road. Originally it was in Arthur Street. And the interesting thing about it, if I may say this, is that in the 1930s, it was described as being the worst slum in Western Europe. The definition of worst, depending upon the number of people living in a square mile. And in later years, I discovered that it was full of refugees from Europe. Jews, Germans, Poles, the lot, were all crowding into this area.
And me.
And Jimmy. And I moved out of that when I was about 18, and I've lived all over Edinburgh, and I now live in near Tollcross. Sorry. Go on, I hide.
Don't say I love you, tell that.
No.
There's a loose connection in here.
Have you lost the whole thing or not?
No, not lost the whole thing, though. No, hour and 24 minutes.
So, yes, I stayed in that area until I was about 18 or 19, and then I started living in digs all over Edinburgh. And today I live in near Toll Cross.
My name's Jimmy. I was born in Loanheid, at middle of the end, just 5 miles outside Edinburgh. And I lived there until the war, and then I was in the army for 6 years. Came out in about a couple of years, I moved into Edinburgh. I was in St. Leonard's Hill for a while, married, of course, and then moved from there to where I am now, Grange Court. It's soon posh, eh?
My name's Noel. I was originally from Leith, and I moved out to Socton Mains. I was interested in when Millie talked about Admiralty Street, because I was trying to get in my head the correct pronunciation for Admiral, and I couldn't do it. All it came out was Admiralty Street, and where John was talking about, I live in that area now, and there's also the local pronunciation for Montague Street, which everybody would call Montague Street.
Montague Street. Yes, I'm John. I was born under a wandering star. It's going to take me away. I was actually brought up in the grass market when it was not quite as sophisticated as it is today. And we, 1930, that's right. And then we moved, got married and moved to the Westport. It was always a step higher. And then up to Polworth, another step higher in gravity. And finally, we reached Morningside. It took me all that time to get the Morningside.
Are you happier in Morningside than you were at the grass market?
Oh, no. I miss the grass market very fondly, actually. You wouldn't believe it. It's only now you realise that what you were reaching out for wasn't all that good at all. And I miss quite a bit the grass market. The companionship, the sense of community. Saturday nights were lively. There was no mugging. They fought each other in the street there. That was it. Every Saturday night there was no arguments, no serious arguments. It was a very, I don't know. There were people there too, of course, the navvies who kept coming and going, you know. But most were good families trying to bring up kids under very difficult circumstances.
I often say that we may not have had much in those days, but we had something that money couldn't buy.
That's right.
Poverty.
And I'll tell you something. You see, I was actually 21 before I realised that things didn't fall off the back of a lorry, because in Leith Docks, it was all, when they were actually unloading the ships, which was all done manually, they used to actually make sure that if it was apples, a box of apples fell when it was getting put on the back of the lorry, and then it was divided out, and somebody would chap the door and say, that fell off the back of a lorry. And then I realised, you know, I was about 21 when I realised that was it. It was actually when it was a crate of whiskey that had fallen off the back of the lorry. It was on its way to Venezuela and got lost in Leith Docks.